Hey guys, welcome to Sexopedia. I'm Sarah. Well, today we're thrilled to invite the legendary Karen Lee as an English pornographic actor, director, and producer, primarily working with brothers. Karen is among the highest paid stars in the industry. His impressive accolades include an AVN Award for Favorite Male Performer and a UK Adult Film and Television Award for Best Male Actor. Well, join us for an engaging conversation with Karen Lee as we explore his remarkable journey and achievements in the adult entertainment industry. Well, welcome, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
It's good. How's your day?
It's been a busy old day today. I've been hiking this morning. It's raining in LA. So when it rains in LA, the whole of Los Angeles stops. They're not used to the rainy weather.
Mm-hmm. Well, sounds really eventful. Well, yeah. Because I know you've been in this industry for like 20 years.
24.
Oh, yeah, 24. You're like basically the porn god. And so my question is, like, how did you get started?
I got started in the industry a long, long time ago. I went on vacation with my friends in the UK. Mm-hmm. We went to a place called Malia. It's like one of the islands. Ended up getting a little bit drunk. Long story short, ended up taking a young lady back and my friends took a picture. Next thing you know, they put it on a swingers website. And then I had all people contacting me, asking me to basically have sex with their wives. And I didn't know anything what this was at the time. And then a company from the UK in Loughborough called Kilogram hit me up and asked if I'd like to shoot a porno. And that's what I did. And then I was contracted to them guys for, I want to say, 3-4 years, and then I went for a year, and then I came to America by chance, just for a friend's wedding, and ended up shooting for Brazzers, and they offered me a contract, and I've been with them 18 years.
Wow, that's a very long period of time. So I'm really curious because I talk to a lot of actors and actresses in this industry. Well, they also, like, you know, started from amateur to professional actors or actresses. Sometimes they face this kind of struggle. Like when you're an amateur and nobody knows you and you just like some sexy stuff, but it's always private. When it first goes to public, they have some struggles about how people are going to judge them or how people around them would think about this. Have you ever had those moments?
Well, you got to think 24 years ago, it was still very taboo. There was no pornographic actors where I was from, really. And was I embarrassed? Yes and no. Like, I kept it very quiet. And then when it did come out, I just kind of owned it. I had the conversation with my mum and she was under the impression, like everyone, that the industry is just full of like drugs and alcohol and people getting taken advantage, which I could assure her it wasn't. And she knew me as a person. She knows that's what I'm not about. And she just said, go for it. And that's what I did throughout my time now in it. I'm not ashamed to say it. And that's what I do. And I've made a fantastic career out of it. And yeah, it's provided me a lovely lifestyle.
Yeah. And it's like, for us new generations, we think we are basically normalizing porn. And we think porn stars are also celebrities. And you guys are making yourself influencers with great business value by your own right. So yeah. But back in the days, you know, when it's 24 years ago and you just get started with brothers. So what made you make this decision that you want to work with them for like 15 years, like a 15-year contract?
18 years. So basically, I signed for 3 months originally and then they liked my work and I loved working with them. And so they extended it again. And then after about a year, I had an opportunity to leave Brazzers and go and sign for a company called Reality Kings. But I just, you know, I've always been a man of my word. And Brazzers gave me my opportunity in America. So I wasn't just going to ditch them at the first sight of somebody offering me a bit more money. So I stayed with Brazzers. And just after that, Brazzers really, really took off. They became a huge, huge studio. And I was part of that building process. I was performing then, directing for them for like 12 years now. So I was doing the performer directing side of things. And it was just a very family kind of business. Even though it's such a big company, it's a very, very family orientated business. They're very, very generous. They look after you. They have your best will at all times, really. So I never had any inkling to go anywhere else.
Yeah, we talked to like Brother Staff in Venus, Berlin, and they are friendly and people are so nice. They like to go around, and we can see from your social media and stuff, like it's like a very supportive team. Brothers is very famous for your storylines and your scenes, right? So where did you guys get those inspirations?
To be honest, I can't really answer that one, just because we have a team of script writers. There's about 1,500 employees mm-hmm. in the office in Canada. Yeah. They sit down and they brainstorm and come up with all different script ideas. And they're the geniuses behind it. We just put it into action, so to speak.
Gotcha. I know like you've been known as the Mr. Nice in this industry, and you've been working with so many actresses along the way mm-hmm. and you have to deal with different people. How did you manage to deal with different personal relationships in this industry, and has anyone ever pushed your limit?
As in performers pushing my limit? Yeah, there is, but I kind of pride myself of having, I always joke and say I'm the princess on set. And there's nobody ever going to out-princess me. And it's kind of like a running joke with the other girls now that they don't even bother. Mm-hmm. It's like, listen, I can try and be a diva, but Kieran will out-diva me. But I do it in a jokey way
yeah.
that it just sets like, you know, a fun day on set. And because I've been in front of the camera and behind the camera. So I think as a performer, first and foremost. So when I'm directing, I think, okay, what would I like? I would like waters on set. I would like, you know, the AC on, maybe, you know, this kind of refreshment, these kind of things that would make my day easier. And so, plus I've heard it for years from performers saying, hey, it would be nice if we had this, and it'd be nice if we had that. So I had the luxury of like having all that knowledge and just bringing it to my own production.
Mm-hmm. Well, it occurs to me that you have to deal with a lot of things on a set, especially if you're being a director or producer. It's not just simply acting the movie. You have to take care of everyone, also be mindful about the angles, camera lightings, and even the actress's appearances. But my question is, because when you're doing it, you will inevitably feel something down there. Well, how did you manage to switch or adapt to these kind of seemingly like contradictory mindsets when you're like making a movie?
It's kind of, so before I'll be in producer mode, director mode. So I'll be thinking, okay, right, I need to get this shot, that shot. And I'm very lucky that I have a really good team behind me. They know my vision. And so they know, because we've worked together for so long, they know exactly what I need and what the company needs in terms of shots. But when it comes into me performing, then I just switch off from that completely and I go into Kieran, the performer mode. And like I said, I'm very lucky that my crew, they know what I need. And I know, as a performer, what I need. So I'll be opening up into certain positions to make sure the light's coming in, the angles are there. So it's one of the gifts of being a good performer, shall I say. You're very camera aware.
Yeah. I'm wondering, because you've been working with Brothers and you're cruel for so long, are there any scenes in particular that you guys have done that it's your personal favorite?
People always ask me which is my favorite scene. I'll always say the very first scene that I directed. It was a scene called Office Foreplay. Mm-hmm. I wrote the script, I cast it, and I just produced it all on my own and sent it to the office. They had no idea that I was producing this scene, and I sent it in and they were amazed. And they were like, okay, we're going to give you some more. And after that, I started out doing like one or two a month, and then it went up to 5, 6, and then 10, 15, and so on. But that scene will always stand out was my baby, the Office Foreplay. Mm.
Yeah, gotcha. It's like seeing your ideal becoming a reality, and that sense of fulfillment, it's really encouraging. Well, I'm also like really curious about the frequency of shooting a scene, like because I know you update your social media quite frequently, and also you're providing us with such amazing content. My question is, because I know when brothers doing a scene or you do directing a scene, it's gonna take a long time. So what's the like, how long does it take for a movie to, you know, make it public? What's the frequency of shooting a scene for you personally?
Like for me personally, I shoot about 10 to 15 scenes a month as a producer director. A typical day on a Brazzers production for me would start at 8 a.m. The girl would arrive, she would have breakfast, then she would go into makeup, hair, and then as soon as she's done with that, she'll come out, she'll have her wardrobe provided for her by a stylist, she'll get changed, and then she'll go over to the photographer. The photographer will then take pictures, and then it will start the acting process. So we'll read the script, we'll go through everything, and then finally we'll get to the sex part. That's where we cut. And what we do is we then do a boundary checklist. So we go through what everybody's comfortable with. So all the girls' likes, don't likes, things that she might not be comfortable with. She might not like her hair being pulled, she might not like a butt being smacked. We go over all this together. Then we go, okay, we know everything that's what's good and what's bad. And then we go ahead and we shoot pictures first. So we do the stills, and then the girl will go back into makeup, get a little touch up. And then the scene itself only takes 25 to 30 minutes to film. If you're a good performer, you don't cut, so you shoot all the way through. And that's it. Then by 5, 6 p.m., you're done. So an average day on set is about 10 hours.
That's a lot of work, actually, and especially if you're shooting 10 to 15 scene a month. Like, I'm really surprised how you manage this level of, you know, energy management.
So I'll do 10 to 15 of the Brazzers scenes, and then I'll shoot probably another 10 scenes for my own content as well, for like my OnlyFans and things like that. So on average, I do about 20 to 25 scenes a month.
That's basically like you're doing like a different scene every day, right?
Yeah,
Cool.
but when it's my own content, it's a lot easier. And then days will only take a couple of hours.
Have you ever like, you know, done a scene with someone that you actually can't get along with, or when you start doing it, things stop working like that one with?
Yeah, many a time. Look, you're not going to vibe with everybody. It's just the way of the world. You're never going to get along with every single person you meet in this wake of life. It's a job at the end of the day, so you know what you're there to do. You might not find the girl attractive. There's all sorts of things that could go on, but that's when you just have to be professional and like go to a happy place and get everything going down below, and then just get on with the job, and that's it.
Well, personally speaking, if I'm having sex with someone I don't like, or, you know, especially when you're doing some rough sex scene, there will be inevitably some times when people showing physical conditions that probably you don't want to see. Well, how do you deal with it mentally?
For me personally, I'm not a big fan of doing aggressive scenes. I always say I'm a lover, not a fighter. The old Michael Jackson saying, like, so for me, when it's a scene where it's kind of abusive towards a lady, it doesn't do anything for me. So I change the whole dynamic of this, because it's just not going to work for me. Everything down below is not going to work. So I just move on from doing them kind of scenes. So I try not to ever put myself in them situations.
Gotcha. Well, many people, they have this kind of assumption, thinking it all starts having an like unlimited amount of sex life. But when it comes to scenes, you just said you have to do like 20 to 25 scenes each month. Well, that sounds like a lot of labor to me. So my question is, when you're making it, you know, into a job and you have to commit to it like basically every day, does sex like start to be boring for you?
Does it become boring? No, not really. Look, you're working with different people every day. You're in unique situations. You might be in a whole different scene altogether. You might be working with someone that you really get along with, that you've worked with numerous of times. So the day itself is fun, and it's like in any workplace. If you're having a fun day at the office, the day is going to go very quickly. So it's just like that in the porno sets.
Well, do you think what's the biggest difference between professional studios like Brazzers and amateur videos?
And you've got to think, when you're shooting for a company like Brazzers, it's very scripted. And so you're doing all the dialogue, and we want to say the cheesy acting before. When you're doing your own content, like I do for myself, it's just very straight to the point. Let's get it on. We don't really do any acting at all. It's more like getting to know each other, talking to the camera, and then straight into a scene. So there's a big, big difference. A lot of time when you're shooting content amateur style, it's just two people, camera on a tripod, or maybe someone will be holding the camera. But when you're on production, you've got lighting, you've got sound guys, makeup, wardrobe, runners. You've got 10 to 15 people on set.
Gotcha. The porn industry is a little bit different from other industries. Like, we know a lot of the industry, they're actually male dominated. But when it comes to adult entertainment, it's usually the female actresses are more popular than male actors. So when it comes to business offers, usually probably female actresses, they are paid more. Well, as an like male performer in this industry, how do you feel about this kind of like reality, and what would you do to make sure your personal image has higher business values?
You've got to remember, look, I'd say 80, 85% of the viewers back home that are watching porn are men. So they are looking at the women more so than the men. So the lady sells the scene. That's what they're looking for. They're not really too fussed about the guy. But I think that there's been a big shift in recent years with the likes of myself, Johnny Sins, Dredd, Manuel Ferrara, Danny D, Geordie. These are guys that have really gone on to establish themselves because they do a good scene. And I think nowadays people back home appreciate that they've got a good male performer in the scene that can bring out the best in the girl, can make the girl go that extra mile where she might be a little bit dirtier than she might have been, with a guy sat there with a flaccid cock. They know what they're getting with us. They know it's going to be a good scene. So our popularity grew. And so then that was it, really. Now the guys have got a great fan base. And, the top guys are probably earning more than the girls now.
And especially seeing more and more like porn stars and actors, they start to value their own social media like image, and that really empowers them a lot, especially with the emergence of OnlyFans. So, well, how do you think about OnlyFans has changed this industry?
I think it's been brilliant for the industry. You got to remember now it's kind of given the performers a shift in power, because before they were at the beck and call of a studio. If they wanted work, they would have to wait for the studio to call them. And some days some girls might not maybe get four or five scenes a month. They'd be making good money still, but you want to be working more than 4 or 5 days in a month. Now they can stay home, they can webcam, they can create their own content and sell their own content, which they're probably making more on that content now than they would for a day just on a studio day. Because you've got to remember that content they shoot on a Monday afternoon, they can sell it forever. So they're constantly going to be making on that scene for years to come.
Well, over the like the 24 years that you have been in this industry, there are a lot of changes and there are a lot of ups and downs. Could you please let us know what's the biggest difficulty that you have ever faced along the way?
Biggest difficulty, I would say, personally, the way that people accept you in day-to-day life. A lot of people will just think, oh, you're a dirty pornographer. That's, you're riddled with STDs. You wouldn't want to be left in a room with them because they're just going to try and fuck you and things like that, which is, it's very far from the truth. It's, like I said, I have my work life and my personal life are completely different. But I was very lucky that I surrounded myself with a very good group of friends from a young age that I've known since I was, 3, 4 years of age, and we still talk daily. And I still do base, the normal things like going to the football match or playing golf or playing football at night. And people see then that he's just a normal person.
Yeah.
The whole world religious sites kind of want to make you out to be.
Right, exactly. And I think a lot of the people they held those kind of prejudices. They think this is not like a legitimate job or anything, but when you check the views of Pornhub and the ranking stuff like that, you have found there will be a significant amount of views. It's just an industry. It's not about the people who are doing it. It's more about legalize the whole thing, and that's a much more complicated like questions.
So, like for me, for example, I've had three bank accounts closed for no reason.
Wow.
Just they gave no reason. And obviously, you find out later on it's because you do adult. But I look at it and I think each year I pay a crazy amount in taxes. They're always paid. All my accounts are all, above board, legit. They're there for them to see. But they just look and think, okay, pornography, we're going to close this person's account.
Oh my
To just
God.
know.
Yeah, I know you guys suffer a lot from discrimination, and it's very difficult along the way. Because when you enter this industry, when someone tell you, okay, this may not be all right, probably you just don't really give a shit about it. But when it's a lot of people or it's become some societal gaze, that's different. Well, have you ever questioned your career path because of it?
No, you know what? I made my bed and it's one of them where I lie in it and I look at it and I go, if I'd have stayed in Derby where I was, I would have been working in the railway. I would have probably been doing a 9 till 5 and just living for the weekend, really. Where now I've had the opportunity to travel all over the world to some of the most beautiful places. It's enabled me to be financially set, and it also enabled me to meet the love of my life. We went on. I've been happily married for 14 years, and I have three amazing children. So these are the kind of sides that people don't see. And I always look at it like this: if it wasn't for being in the industry, I would have never have met my wife, and I would have never have had these children. So I'm very lucky and blessed.
And because I've done an interview with you at in like Venus Berlin, and you've always mentioned your happy family and your wife, and that's really in contradictory about some people's assumptions about porn stars. They think a porn star is having a difficulty to build a stable relationship or something, but it's really not the case. Especially probably back in the days, people have different prejudice, but now it's a $1 billion business and it's feeding a lot of family. So that's a totally different perspective. Well, I have this question about how do you balance this? Being in this industry, you have to work with a lot of girls, and meanwhile, you have to be a good husband and a good father. That's not
Really
easy.
easy question to answer. Like I said, it's you have separate lives. When I go to set, and it's no different for me being a builder, going to the yard at 8 o'clock in the morning, coming home 5 o'clock at night. But at the end of the day, as soon as I walk through that door, my children need me. They need feeding, they need bathing, they need their schoolwork done, and that's what me and my wife do as a team. We're very, very normal household. It's no different to even if I was a doctor. I could be a brain surgeon. My home life is, I would say, even better than that, because we make time. Like I might go, you know what? I need to be at my son's graduation, or is an assembly, he's picking up an award. I have the flexibility to move my work and do whatever I need to be, so I can always be there. Now, I look at some parents and they don't have that opportunity. They're missing on their children growing up. They're having to get nannies to look after their kids while they're at work. We don't have that. My wife literally raises my children, and we try and give them the best start in life, which is possible. And so, but yeah, we're very, very, very lucky in that sense.
That's perfect. It's really loving family. I'm glad that you are living in a life like that. Well, next question. I hope it's not intrusive. So, given the fact like we're basically in a digital era, and a lot of things that you've done on social media probably is gonna stay there. What if one day your children see it, or you know, when they grow up, they start to watch porn and their friends see it, they say, huh, this is probably your dad. So,
They
yeah.
kind of get that already. Like, look, we've already kind of had that conversation with my eldest, like in the summer. Really, he's just coming to the, he's like 10 now, nearly 11. And we went to Barcelona, we went to Rome, we went to Venice, Paris, London. And in each city, you would always get people coming up, asking for pictures, asking for video shout outs and things like that. And obviously me and my son, we love to go watch the soccer, so we watch it all over. We go all over, and people were asking, like, hey, why do people keep coming up asking you for pictures and things like that? And we just said to him, like, hey, look, there's movies that you can't watch because they're too scary, they're violent. Then there's movies that daddy does that only for adults, so the only adults can watch these movies. But that's how we're kind of breaking him into it. And then eventually, yeah, he's gonna learn and find out that, yeah, daddy did porn movies and things like that. But the way that we bring our children up with, they're in such a loving environment. I can't see them turning their backs and going, oh, I don't want anything to do with my parents and that, because they've been brought up to know that, A, they know better, and they're very open-minded, and they're very loving, caring children as well.
Yeah, and really depends on how you walk the children through these things, how you help them recognize these things. And I, honestly speaking, I think it's pretty cool that if my dad is a global top porn star, I would probably brag it in school. So a lot of times you've done movies with brothers. We found, as you said, there's some sort of like cheesy scenes and stuff. But when you're doing your own content, I saw it's like pretty natural. And do you know that there's a community called Karen Lee's Cult on Reddit?
No, I didn't. I'll
And
have to.
I think there are like 5,000, 6,000 like people following that in there. It's basically all about Karen Lee's moments, facial moments, and people are loving this. So I noticed like when you're creating your own content, it's actually more natural compared to other scenes. What's the philosophy in creating such different content? Because when you're creating something for brothers scenario, sometimes it's quite intentional. So what do you think like an audience prefer?
So, me personally, I think they prefer the at home sex tapes, because you've got to think, when you're performing for like a company, it's very staged, you're very camera aware, and you want everybody to see, and they're paying for a product, the browsers are. So, they want to get the highest possible product they can get. When you're doing content at home, it's kind of like seeing that performer in their natural environment, seeing them naturally perform, and you're not going through four or five positions like you would on a browser scene. Sometimes you might only do two or three, but they're very intense. You're not opening up for the camera, and I think people really enjoy seeing, that at home, going, wow, look at these animals in their natural environment, so to speak.
Yes, it really depends on different, personal preference. And I notice like when brothers is creating content, they have global audience. They have to distribute it to people all around the world. Well, do you guys create content based on different region preferences?
Me personally, no, not reason, really. I will go with a lot of my content is aimed at, like, I shoot with a lot of new girls, so it's a lot of like Instagram girls that have never shot mainstream porn. Because a lot of these girls are like dabbling into the industry. They've maybe shot with a boyfriend or two, but then all their fans are saying, hey, we want to see you do a scene with Kieran Lee, with Johnny Sins, with Dredd, with Manuel. So these girls are then going, well, if I'm going to do it, I want to do it with someone like Kieran Lee. So they're the girls that I kind of tend to shoot a lot with. I also end up shooting with a lot of like hot wife couples. That seems to be extremely popular. The thought of a married woman having sex with a known porn star is a big kink for a lot of people, and they love it, and so it sells great online. So I target them to niches quite heavily.
Well, I have a question about like you guys picking someone that you want to work with. Because when we approach different influencers or porn stars, a lot of times people really care about their traffic. And if, you know, usually people don't want their traffic goes to someone without being paid. But you just mentioned like you work with a lot of new people in the industry, doing movies with Instagram girls. Like, so how do you think about it? Like when you're doing this? Because you're working with new people, not someone, you know, like super famous.
Yeah. See, look, I could shoot scenes with Angela White, with Brandy Love all day long, and they're brilliant, brilliant girls. But are people going to want to go and buy that scene of me and Brandy Love or me, Angela White or Emma Hicks, when you can go on Brazzers and watch 10 scenes with me and Brandy Love?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to want to see with different performers. And then, look, that's how these new performers are always created. They, you know, this one girl might come in. Next thing you know, she's a global superstar. And she kicks on. So, you know, I've worked with many, many girls that have done their first ever scene. And then they've gone on to be huge. Like, you know, the likes of a Bella Danger. I remember shooting one of Lana Rhodes' first ever scenes, Riley Reid, one of her first ever scenes, and things like that. It's, you know, you never know, like this one girl could go on to be huge.
Exactly. Yeah. And especially when people know that porn star is becoming basically an occupation and you have to really dedicate it to it. I know Riley Reid, she does tons of scenes, and that kind of work is beyond imagination. And also, as you just mentioned, 22, at least 20 to 25 scenes each month, and not including the time you devoted for probably community management, your social media account management and stuff like that. So it's really not like people think it's not easy money. It's a profession. No. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the whole misconception these days. People think, oh, they've just put a camera down and they've just uploaded it and that's it. You know, they don't realize sometimes you have to edit the movie. You have to set the days up. You have to book locations. You know, for girls, for example, they want to look their best still, so they still go and get their makeup done. They have to go buy nice lingerie. They want to feel good. And then when it goes to your social media, you want to be relevant. So you want to be doing podcasts. You want to be doing your Instagram reels. You've got to be posting on Twitter, on Reddit, and trying to grow your brand as big as possible. Like any brand in the world, whether it be Amazon, Apple, they're going to advertise and market because they want to keep that brand growing bigger and bigger and bigger. It's no different to anybody in the porn industry. But yeah, we do get a lot of stick for that. They just, you know, especially now that OnlyFans has come around, because people think, oh, it's easy money.
No, it's not easy. Really.
They've got no dignity, but it's easy money. But it's like, well, hang on, maybe come and do a day in our lives and see that it's not exactly what you think it is.
Right, exactly. Especially when you're making it a career. And a lot of times people, they have this kind of like misconception about porn star not being a career, porn star not being healthy, but it's really not the case, because knowing the kind of physical strength needed to be a porn star, and most porn stars I know, they take great care of their personal health, both physically and mentally. They don't smoke, they eat well, they go to the gym, they don't do drugs because they need their body to perform well. So it's really different from the traditional point of view. Now it's more like a career.
Look, at the end of the day, you wouldn't get an athlete, you wouldn't get LeBron James being where he is today if he was going out partying, drinking every weekend or before a match. It just not going to happen. And that's the same as like a male performer or a female performer. They you know, they really think about their body, their mind, to make sure that they're going in peak physical condition for their scenes.
Yes, and a lot of times I notice like you guys are actually really low-key, and you guys actually don't need any attention in real life, is it? Right. And usually, because I think it's about work-life balance, as you just mentioned, you have different energy at home and different energy at the set. So there's really no need to stigmatize the whole industry, as long as it's professionally produced and the content is distributed to someone, you know, to the proper place, to the proper audience. And I think that's all about it. I have another question for you. That's from a news report. I hope this one is not offensive. It's about your insurance for your penis.
Oh, yeah.
Can I ask about that?
Yeah, for sure, no problem. So, well,
So what made you like insure your penis for US dollars?
it basically came from like a inside joke in the office, because when I first was contracted to Brazzers, I was shooting so much. The running joke was, what are we going to do if Kieran ever breaks his dick? Like, who's going
Yeah.
to replace it? And so they went, okay, that's a good point. We better insure it. And so it started out as a joke, and then we kind of looked into it and we thought, hang on, it's quite a good little like publicity stunt. And we looked into it. Nobody else had done it. And then so I joined the elite list of the likes of Tom Jones, Jennifer Lopez, David Beckham. They all had body parts insured. So yeah, I'm one of the lucky ones.
I think it makes sense because you really need your penis to perform, and it's basically the very important part of your career, and your career is like worth a lot of business value, so it really makes sense when you want to insure that. But
Without my penis, there's no curing.
yeah, and right. So other questions we have is, because I know you work with a lot of new people, and that's really kind of you offering other people like opportunity to work with you as well. So, do you have any advice for young people who want to enter this industry?
I always say, stay humble. That's the biggest one. A lot of people progress within the industry, and sometimes the bigger they get, the chip on the shoulder. And like I said, you never know. It's that person that you shoot with on a Monday 2 years ago, 3 years from now, she could be a global superstar. And that goes for girls and guys. Do you know what I mean? So just treat everybody with respect. That's how I've always looked at it. For me, I've always gone through life. I don't care if you're the CEO of the company or the janitor of the company. You always treat people with respect. You use your manners, your please and thank you. That's just how I was brought up. Everybody's equal. I've never been one for, race or anything like that. I've always looked at everybody exactly the same, because at the end of the day, we all bleed claret.
Yeah, exactly. And I can tell that when we first interviewed you, because we are a startup company and it's just basically two young people approaching you, you did not like show us any of those attitude. You were so nice to us. You make jokes, you make the interview a blast for a lot of people. So we're really grateful that we have this chance, like talking to you and your time, of course. Well, you also mentioned a lot of times that this industry, even if it's helped you to like establish a good life, right? This industry isn't always glamorous. So are there any like situations where you would suggest young people they don't pursue this path?
Listen, the grand old question I get asked a lot is, would I say to my children, get in the industry? And I'd be brutally honest and say no. People will go, well, why is it good enough for you but not good enough for your children to get in that industry? I just got very, very lucky. I ended up with a brand that was on the way up, and they exploded, and they took me with them. And they made my name what it is today. Nowadays, it's very different. You don't have the studios that make these brands anymore. Again, it's a lot of amateur content that's coming through. Now, can you have the longevity doing that? I don't think you can. You've got the likes of, let's say, like your Bonnie Blues and Lily Phillips that have just come into the industry. They're making a huge splash at the moment. But can I see them doing the intense work that they're doing now in 4 years' time? No, I couldn't see that at all. I think they'll make fantastic money on it, and I think they'll go on to different opportunities that will come to them. But yeah, I just for like now, I just can't see people building, a 20, 25-year career from it anymore.
Yeah, I agree. Because a lot of people, they probably are judging this whole industry and thinking about it's easy money or having a lot of misconception, thinking it's something, oh, probably I can do it, I can be famous or something. But it's a lot of way times it's really like what you've just mentioned. Sometimes it's about opportunities, and the way that they operate this whole business has like evolved over the time. So it's definitely something that we need to really think about it. One last question I have, it's about how do you guys like suggest people to keep healthy for different sexual activities?
So that's another good question. You know, people look and go, Kieran, how can you preach about safe sex when we've never seen you use a condom in a scene and things like that, where people don't realize that Kieran goes and gets tested every 10 days for STD panel, from HIV to syphilis to gonorrhea, chlamydia, MGEN. Like, these aren't your standard tests that, you know, everybody gets every week. And I've had instances where I'll still remember it. A lady came up to me one time in a bar and said, oh my God, you're disgusting. You have sex with all these women without condoms. And I just politely replied and said, look, the girls that I work with, they're all tested. I said, what about you? When was the last time you got tested? And the lady replied that, oh, she'd been with her boyfriend for 3 years. And I just jokingly said, well, how do you know he's ever never cheated on you?
Yeah.
And that was it. Should we say the conversation didn't end well. And then I saw the lady maybe about 9 months later, and she came up to me and she apologized and said to me, she said, it's funny that, you know, what you said, it kind of stuck in my mind a little bit. And she went for a lady checkup with a gynecologist, and she decided to have, you know, a full test and everything done below. She came back, she was positive for chlamydia. So her boyfriend had been cheating on her.
Okay.
And so that goes to show, you know, people outside the industry, they don't get tested regularly. And so, yeah, it's one of them where I would like, you know, when I'm in the process of moving back to the UK soon, and I would like to talk it like, you know, university, and say, hey guys, look, go get yourself checked up every 3 to 6 months. It's not going to hurt you, because it's going to prevent, you know, things in the future, you know, especially in a lady's case, if a lady can catch chlamydia and she might have no symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But doesn't realize the repercussions of it, you know, down the line. She could leave it dormant, you know, for a year, 2 years, but that can really affect her chances of having children in the future and things like that. So it's just making people aware that, yeah, okay, yes, we don't use condoms, but we're very, very strict on our testing policies.
Exactly. I think most of the prejudice, like misconceptions people have about the whole industry is because they think there's like the porn industry is selling like let's say sexual stuff, but at the end of the day it's actually selling content. With that being said, like, the whole industry is commercialized and standardized, so it's not really like you guys are doing something unprotected. No, it's not really the case. I know you guys really respect each other's boundaries and personal health and hygiene, so yeah, that's very different from like the misconception that some people might have.
Yeah. A lot of people just think, oh, they just willy-nilly have sex and don't use condoms, don't get tested, and then just hope that they don't catch anything, where we have a whole testing policy in where we have to show each other's tests before, and it's like you're either green, good to go, or you're red. And that just might mean your test is expired or you have a bad test, but it just means you're not available to work.
Yes, exactly. All right. You just mentioned like you're moving back to UK, because I know you're from the UK, you're from Derby, and you love your hometown. So how's life in LA going for you? And did you ever like experience any cultural difference when you get here?
When I first got here, yeah, it was very hard to adjust, because I missed a lot of things from back home. I grew up with a very strong group of friends, but the biggest one was I'm a big mummy's boy, and, you know, I really, really like struggled, like not seeing my mum daily and things like that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the longer time goes by, you know, you had like Zoom, Skypes and things like that, FaceTime. So it's a lot easier now. And then also making friends. I was very lucky that when I first moved to the UK, there was a big expat community of Brits over here.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined a football team over here, which was full of English people. And so we kind of kept a lot of like traditions like from back home. So like when it's like Christmas Day, we would have all the English people around it, like one person's house, and we'd cook English food and, and just like go and watch the football. And like even now, I play football 2, 3 nights a week, all with English people. And then I play golf probably 2, 3 times a week as well. And it's just that English sense of humor.
Yeah.
But the big decision for me to move back home is I want my family growing up near their family. Like my mum still lives back home, my sister lives back in Derby. My wife's family, she's from Boston originally, but her family moved to Europe about 3 years ago now. So we want our family growing up close together. I don't want to look back in 10, 15 years and think, I wish my mum had had more time with, my children like I did
Yes.
growing up. I grew up with my mum and my gran, so I don't want them to miss out on that as well.
Right, exactly. And family always comes first. Well, I think I have to let you go now. And I'm really grateful for your time. Thank you for coming. Thank you for everything. And I'm super grateful about everything.